DOT action on tarmac strandings turns out to be all show and no substance. I'm Paul Plack, and this is Aero News. Welcome into the Aero News special feature. Thanks for downloading us today. My guest today is Kate Hanai of FlyersRights.org. Kate was stranded on the tarmac on an airliner a couple years ago, and much to the chagrin of the industry, she used that as a springboard of motivation to start an organization originally called the Coalition for an Airline Passengers Bill of Rights, now called just FlyersRights.org, which makes it obvious where you can find them on the web. We want to talk a little bit about something the DOT did a few days ago, and Kate, thanks for taking some time out for us today.
Oh, Paul, it's so great to talk to you again.
Well, listen, this looked like really good news. There was an issue where a flight was diverted to Rochester, Minnesota, got there at 12:30 in the morning. Through a circus of errors and misrepresentations, the passengers were stuck on the plane until dawn, were finally allowed into the terminal at 6:15 or something like that, and then 3 hours later were put back on the plane, still with overflowing lavatories, and flown the rest of their trip. The thing that made this a remarkable story to me is that they had been told to expect services, the crew of the plane had been told to expect services when they got to the airport. Then not only could they get the plane serviced, but Mesaba Airlines, which was responsible apparently for ground service on that night, told the crew of the plane that they couldn't let the passengers in the terminal because TSA was gone for the night, which was patently not true. And the Department of Transportation came down with fines against these airlines a few days ago and announced them, and Ray LaHood sounded indignant and something will be done, blah, blah. But if we look at it carefully, not a whole lot happened here. First of all, tell us your first reaction when you heard the DOT's press release.
My first initial reaction, not knowing what the contents of the executive orders were, was hooray. The Department of Transportation made it sound as if they were fining the airlines because they had held people beyond a quote unquote reasonable amount of time, which is what every one of us wants to hear, that someone's going to step in and fine the airlines for holding people on the tarmac. But once I read the executive orders, I realized very quickly these fines were not imposed for holding people on the tarmac. They were imposed because the airline promised not to do it in the case of Continental and ExpressJet. They promised they would allow people off. They made commitments that after 3 hours they would allow you off a plane no matter what. And I mean, unless it was unsafe to do so. Which clearly that was not the case here. And Mesaba Airlines ramp tower operator was that fine, I believe, was absolutely correct in that they were fined for simply making a wrong call and not allowing the plane to come into a gate. That said, I just don't want the public to be confused about what the fines represent. It's very important that the public understand this is a good thing that they fine the airlines for deceptive practice and false advertising. But it's an illusion if passengers think that now the DOT is going to fine the airlines for holding people on the tarmac. And the result of this likely will be that every airline that had a time frame in their customer service commitments is going to remove it. I predicted that last week, and we're already starting to see evidence of that. Continental no longer has any time frame in their customer service commitments after which they will let you off a plane, and American Airlines has removed theirs as well.
Well, and now this is interesting, too, because I remember talking to you a little over a year ago. It was November of 08. We were talking specifically at that time about the weasel words in the airlines' contracts of carriage. And I've got a couple of those up in front of me now. In the case of extraordinary events that result in very lengthy onboard delays, American Airlines and American Eagle will make every reasonable effort to ensure that essential needs are met and so forth. And then, of course, as if every reasonable effort wasn't vague enough, the last line is we are not responsible if we don't. United Airlines had said, in addition, where extraordinary circumstances result in the extended delay of an aircraft on the ground without access to the terminal, United will make every reasonable effort, there's that phrase again, in accordance with established contingency plan to ensure its passengers are provided with, you know, the needs, food, water, medical treatment, so forth. Now, if I hear you correctly, it was Continental and ExpressJet got the hammer from the DOT, not because of the strandings, but because of those weasel words were construed as being false and misleading advertising.
That's correct. Well, it was false advertising because they didn't keep it. And what the DOT is aware of, as we are aware of, you know, Kellner wanted to tell the world at the NBTA convention in August, about a week or so after this Rochester event, he said it was a one-off. He said, oh, this never happens. It was a one-off. Well, December 10th of last year, there were 75 Continental jets that sat for up to 7.5 hours on the tarmac in Houston. And there were several months in spring and early summer of this year where Continental appeared to be in a complete meltdown, holding people frequently over 3 hours on the tarmac. We were getting a lot of calls on our hotline. So I think the DOT's aggravation was twofold. A, they are aggravated about the strandings. They're aggravated that they're having to deal so much with us, frankly, at FlyersRights.org. And they would like to put an end to this ongoing drama for people. Secondly, the purview that they do have that's already been legislated is false advertising. And they fine them for false advertising in a variety of ways frequently. So in a sense, it was deceptive to say to the public, this is a first ever fine of its type. It may be the first ever fine related to a stranding, but truthfully, it's a false advertising fine. And they have fined the airlines fairly frequently for false advertising.
All right. Well, let's, when we come back from the break, let's talk for a minute about what this really means in the overall scope of things. My guest is Kate Hanai of FlyersRights.org. Back with more in a moment. I'm Paul Platt. You're listening to a special feature from Aero News.
You hear that sound? It's one of the all-time great inventions. Takes lids off cans just like that. But now, let's picture something even bigger. A tool that can take the lid off a whole airport. Actually, thousands of airports. It's a Garmin WAAS GPS. Lets you make glide path approaches using runways that were once closed tight during IFR conditions. Hey, if you're gonna fly in the soup, you gotta have an opener. Garmin WAAS GPS. Follow the leader.
Diamond Aircraft's D-Jet is the ultimate private aircraft for the owner-flown market, offering simplicity of operation, safety, and affordability. Imagine starting the turbine with a simple push of a button. Push the single-lever throttle forward. Monitor your flight on the cutting-edge G1000 with integrated autopilot and enjoy the reliability, performance, smoothness, and quiet of turbine power. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3222.
Welcome back to the Aero News special feature. Paul Plack here with Kate Hanai of FlyersRights.org, talking about Continental, ExpressJet, Masaba, and DOT, and kind of making sense of this story. Kate, when I read the DOT's press release, Ray LaHood was very indignant about what had happened to these passengers. But really, what DOT is doing is kind of a cop-out, and it has already resulted in airlines apparently taking steps to make sure that there's nothing in their contracts of carriage that can be used to pin them down again in a case like this for false advertising.
That's correct. You hit the nail on the head. You know, basically, they've forced the airlines into a corner in a good way, in the sense that there really was no commitment on the part of any of the airlines to address this issue. It was cover for them to say, well, we've got this rule, knowing that it was really an internal operational guideline, and also knowing they put them in the customer service commitments, not in the contract of carriage. So the passengers could never enforce that language anyway, because those customer service commitments were not incorporated into the contract of carriage. They weren't even made amendments to the contract of carriage. So if it's not in the contract, it really doesn't exist anyway, but the customer service commitments are used as advertising by the airlines to the public, even though they're not enforceable. So it's tricky for the public to have to weed through things like this, and not having it in there simplifies things in that the only thing more honest would be for the airlines to put in there, we have the right to hold you indefinitely, and we have the right not to provide you with usable toilet, trash receptacles that are clean, breathable air, temperature control, oxygen, food, water, a seat belt, you know, mm-hmm. You get it? So it really has made it a little bit more transparent, but not enough so that passengers are going to know that they could be held indefinitely. Most people are very surprised by that. Go ahead.
Let me ask you about the fines themselves, because they're not, when I first saw them, I thought, well, you know, $100,000 or $75,000 is an impressive sounding number, but, you know, against the backdrop of an airline's annual budget, it's a basic slap on the wrist. And what I've learned since from you is that they won't even have to pay that, all that money.
Right. They won't have to pay the money. They will only be paying 50% upfront, and then they must spend the other 50% developing best practices that they must print on paper and give to the DOT, but they never have to actually implement those best practices, and they don't have to train any of their employees on these best practices. So this is basically just a development and printing exercise in order to get $37,500 in the case of Mesaba, or $25,000 for ExpressJet and $25,000 for Continental forgiven.
Okay, there's that aspect of it now. And there's also the issue that the DOT may have done this specifically to make it look to people who are active on the issue like they're resolving the problem and kind of throw them off the trail.
That's correct. And I plan to come out with a press release this next week stating that, you know, we applaud the DOT for imposing this fine for deceptive advertising. However, the flying public should not be fooled, and also revealing that the airlines have now removed any timeframes from their customer service commitments, so they should know not to count on anything.
What about the federal lawmakers who would be responsible for drafting an airline passenger's bill of rights, which has been your goal all along? Are they fooled by this, or did they know what's going on?
They're not fooled by it. They know what's going on. Senator Boxer and Senator Snow immediately came out with a press release that said, good job, DOT, and thank you, Secretary Ray LaHood. However, we want to make sure that the public knows that an airline passenger bill of rights must be legislated, because this fine is not going to stop this from happening.
Well, Kate, what we're left with then is, what do we still need to do if we're concerned about this issue? If we're stranded on an airliner, and B, if someone wants to aid you in moving this agenda forward?
Well, A, everyone needs to advocate for themselves with a big A, and they need to make sure that they have enough. If they're traveling commercially, they have enough items in their carry-on bag for survival for 48 hours. We suggest they take enough medicines for 3 days, just in case they get disconnected from their baggage, from their checked baggage for any length of time. But, you know, people need to understand they can be held indefinitely. And if they don't like it and they feel like air travel in this country has gone third world on them, then they need to start contacting their senators and congressmen and telling them that they won't accept anything less than a mandatory time frame of 3 hours or less on the tarmac in our airline passenger bill of rights. We have House language that has passed that does not have a 3 hour rule in it. The Senate bill, I've heard, should come out of the Finance Committee before Christmas and is estimated to be on the floor by the middle of January right now. That's what I'm hearing from the Commerce Committee. So there's time for people to get in touch with their senators and say, you know, it's just simply unacceptable that in the United States we can't have a robust domestic air transportation system that doesn't protect its passengers.
Well, Kate, I have to tell you that if I had to put together a list of the most effective people of 2009, I'd have to find a place for you on it, because I still think it's amazing where you've come from the moment that this happened to you to this day. And I congratulate you on this, and we will put our listeners in touch with you at www.flyersrights.org, and that's Flyers, F-L-Y-E-R-S, or 1-877-FLYERS-6.
Well, thank you, Paul.
Have the best possible holiday season, and we'll look forward to watching you go in 2010.
Well, Paul, thank you, and I wish you the best also during this holiday, and hopefully very few people have these kinds of experiences over the holidays. We know some will, but with travel down, maybe fewer will.
Kate Hanai is the founder of FlyersRights.org, and you've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. Find us on the web at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.